You know where we left off? It says the peoples. This is from Am, which can be families and nations. It was written in the plural as Amim. The peoples have heard. The masses have heard. Choosing to continually tremble in fear with regard to the writhing anguish which has seized those who have settled, those who live in, the inhabitants of Peleth. This is fascinating because what it says is that this is the first time that this name is used. And the first time the name is used, and it's from a Hebrew root that conveys an invader who attacks, invoking fear, separating and terrorizing. The first time it's used, we're told what this group of people are like. Now, there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever that the Philistines, to use the modern transliteration of Peleth, there is no indication whatsoever that they were an independent racial group.
No.
There's no indication they were an independent ethnic group. There is absolutely no building that they built that has survived their ravages of time. Not one. They did not have a written alphabet, so there's nothing of their history that is known. There is no record of them anywhere in the world apart from what's written in the pages of the Torah and prophets. So 100% of what is known about them is derived from what Yahweh has to say about them. And the first mention of them is that they were terrorists. But it's not just saying that they were terrorists in terms of their dealings with other people. They abused their own.
Yeah, they terrorized themselves.
Yeah, how many times have I said that, you know, that the first victims of Islam and the most universal victims of Islam are Muslims?
Absolutely.
Muslims rape more Muslims. They rob more Muslims. They kill more Muslims.
Okay.
They terrorize more Muslims than they do infidels by probably a ratio of 100 to 1.
Well, the most bizarre thing is when you were doing a lot of news stories at the time, and in order to get even with something they didn't like against the West, they would go blow up some of their own people.
Correct. Yeah, Muslim.
How bizarre can you get?
The people known as Palestinians today, people who have ignorantly, errantly attributed this ancient name to themselves to create the illusion that they are a people and that they have a nation and that Israel is occupying their nation, just to say that and to know that Bonn of the United Nations is bellyaching that Israel is ruthlessly occupying the land of the Palestinians, just shows you how disgusting, how ignorant, how irrational, how grotesquely immoral the world has become.
Yeah.
Because not only is there nothing known about these people, apart from what Yahweh has to say about them, and he uses the term to describe them as it says they're foreign invaders. So if they really are the Philistines, guess what? They don't belong there. They're foreign invaders.
Yeah.
But what's most amazing of all is that what we know of them from Yahweh's testimony is that they became an irritant to the Assyrians as the Assyrians were battling, and the Babylonians later, were battling the Egyptians.
They were working their way down the coast.
And as they were working their way down the coast, these guys were always in the way.
Yeah.
And so they just did away with them. And well, there is no record as to whether or not they wiped them all out to the last or they brought some of them back to Babylon as slaves. But all we know is that what little few people may have survived it, there isn't a building that survived it. There isn't a remnant that survived it. A few, on the best of circumstances, may have been brought back as slaves and eventually died there or integrated into the greater Babylonian and then Persian empire. There is no such thing as a Palestinian person, a Palestinian people. The last of them, when we're going back nearly 550 BCE. That's when all traces of them was lost. But when they were known, they terrorized their own people. They anguished their own people. They afflicted their own people. It's talking about how they were treating their own.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Right. You know, that's the reason for the flood. Yahweh said that man was treating his fellow man horribly. Yeah, immorally, viciously, ruthlessly. That's what they were doing. So I guess the Palestinians do have something in common with the Philistines.
Adapted their characteristics, haven't they?
They certainly have. And they are invaders who do not belong.
Right.
So that's the first reference to them. Then we read in Shemuel 17:26, and Dod, which means the beloved, corrupted to David. There's no V in Hebrew, so it's definitely not David. Could it be Dod with a supplied I before the D? Possibly, but it's the we know there's two consonants and one vowel. The consonants are D, are both D's, and the vowel is a W. Dod. Said to the individuals who stood by him. Him is Goliath. Approaching by proclaiming, what shall be done with regard to the individual who beneficially strikes down and defeats, destroying this one Philistine, and who removes the disgraceful blasphemy, the reproach and criticism, the rebuke, the contempt and scorn, as well as the taunting insults from upon Yisrael, the individuals who engage and endure with God? So what Dod is saying here is that if this man who has terrorized Israel, who is now taunting Israel and taunting Israel's God, Yahweh, who is mocking everything that Israel stands for and threatening everything as Israel stands for.
And it was working.
Right. If a man does away with this one Philistine, what are you going to do? How are you going to respond to Dod at that point? That's what Dod is asking you. For indeed, who and what is this uncircumcised? If he's uncircumcised, he is absolutely unequivocally estranged from the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a foreigner. So that,
and in his case, he's actually taken a mark. That would be the same as taking a mark for with sleep.
Right, right. So he is excluded and therefore an invader in Israel and the covenant. So, outsider. So what indeed, for indeed, who and what is this uncircumcised Philistine? So the first thing he's doing is saying, who is this? What does this person represent?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's asking you. Who is Goliath? What does he represent? He represents man's arrogance. He represents the military and the, you know, the special troops, the Green Berets, the Rangers, the Navy SEALs.
The trained killer.
The trained killer. That's what he represents. So he describes the armaments that he had and his attitude. And he says, so who is this? What does this guy represent? That's the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second question is, so what are you going to do? How are you going to respond to the individual who does away with him? Because this individual that does away with him is doing away with someone who is taunting, mocking, annoying the people. And in fact, it even says that Goliath's testimony caused people to think improperly, so as to lean in the wrong direction. That's the next statement here. So, for indeed, who and what is this Philistine, who this individual, who with his physical stigma serves as a sign that he is owned by another, that he should insult and taunt and ridicule and mock, annoying with evil rhetoric that causes the people to think improperly, so that they lean in the wrong direction and take the wrong course of action with regard to the proper arrangement established by the living God. So What does Philistine represent? It represents that which misleads, that which is improper. Rhetoric that causes people to move in the wrong direction, to be out of sync with the proper arrangement of things as the God has established them. The person with a stigma that is owned by another. And so, Dode has asked you, how are you going to respond to the individual who does away with it? Are you going to build a statue to him that shows him, by the way, it shows Dode uncircumcised? You're going to build a statue to him so that you can worship a man whose appearance you have no clue as to what he looked like? And put that statue in a religious building? Is that what you're going to do? Or are you going to think, wait a minute, this person with a single stone did away with the most formidable warrior who was the best armed warrior of his day, and he went right up to him and said, you're disgusting. You do not belong here. Your rhetoric is appalling. And he's asking you, so how are you going to respond to the person that does away with it? And Dode's not saying that he wants you to worship him. Dode's not saying I want you to honor me. He's saying he wants you to realize you can respond the same way. You don't need a military. What you need to do is to come to know God as he revealed himself. And understand what he's offered and act upon it. And you too will be able to silence these foes.
I don't think most people can wrap their head around that anymore, that they could actually live in this world and be protected by Yah without an army. They just worship the army. They think.
You know, when I got my my full appreciation of this was
when you went to Israel that time.
Yeah, when I went to Israel and I had Al-Qaeda and Hamas and Hezbollah with automatic weapons pointed at my head. And I'm in a dungeon with a single bars on the windows and unarmed with anything other than a pen, and I'm provoking them. I'm doing the same thing Dode's doing here, man. I'm provoking them. I said, your rhetoric is disgusting. You're idiots. And yet they wanted to kill me, but they didn't. And then since I've written Prophet of Doom and done 3,000 radio interviews on it, I've had many thousands of death threats, and yet I'm the only person who's ever done this in their own name, who does not hide. Why? Because what is a gun going to do me any good? What is a police protection going to do me any good when I've got Yahweh? And you know, it's not like that. You know, I have done something that deserves Yahweh's protection. It's just Yahweh said I want a job done.
Yahweh does,
and He protects His children. If you do what He wants, He protects your children. Now, if I made a stupid decision today, flying my airplane, it's not God's job to protect me. I'm not doing something that is of Yahweh's business. But if I'm exposing and condemning Satan's most ridiculous religion,
he's right there with you.
Man, every step of the way. And that is what Dode is saying. Dode is stepping between the most belligerent warrior of his day and God's chosen people. And he defeats him.
What's not to like about that guy? Now you know why Yahweh.
Yeah, loves him. Right.
You're right, pal.
But by the way, I can speak for myself in this regard. It didn't require any courage on Dode's part whatsoever. It required some backbone, required some confidence, but no courage. If Yah is doing the protecting, if Yah is doing the guiding, then why do you need courage?
Step up to the plate.
Right. Just show some backbone. So anyway, this is our first second explanation of who the Philistines are, and we come to learn a lot. Now it says, over and upon Peleth, I trumpet a warning and I shout for joy. This is one of Dode's statements regarding the Philistines. Over and upon all Peleth, the land occupied by Pelisti, the foreign foes who attack, attempting to invade, invoking fear while separating and terrorizing, I trumpet a warning, and I shout for joy. He is explaining Teruah here.
Absolutely.
The way of man from Babylon to Assyria to the Median Purge to the Greeks to the Romans, including the Spartans and the Carthaginians, and now today the Americans, was the way of the Spanish and the way of the colonial Brits.
Absolutely.
Is to rely on their weapons. That's what they did. And what Yahweh was saying, if you're going to live by the sword, then I'm going to give you this warning. You'll die by it. You don't need a military. Not only don't you need a military, it's counterproductive.
It's turn on you.
Right. Saul's military was was unable to defeat the Philistines. We're going to learn here that the
one in Israel.
Yeah, and then what we're going to find is that that Shamuel encourages the Israelites to disassociate with the Astartes, the queens of heaven, the mother of God, the virgin and child, and the Baals, the lords.
Mm-hmm.
And they do so, and Shamuel says, hey, well, we've done what you asked for, Yahweh. They did what I asked them to do on your behalf, and Yahweh says that, well, for the rest of the time that Shamuel lives, not a single Philistine will ever step foot in Israel.
Right. And that was true.
And that's the way it was. So Dod is exclaiming, and Dod's, you know, a long time after Shamuel. Now, we're talking probably 400 years. And he's exclaiming that while they wiped out Saul and Saul's family and humiliated Israel, that Dod shouts out the warning, don't buy into the militaristic state. And he shouts for joy because rather than relying on the militaristic state, you rely on Yahweh. So this is the progression of things. Then we read down here, this is now, we're turning to Joel 4, 1 through 4. This is starting to get really interesting as we see what's in Yoel, we see what's in the Judges, we then turn to Jeremiah. It just gets more and more interesting. And this, by the way, is the fun of transitioning between knowing and understanding. Knowing is fun. Knowing is fun means that you go in and you translate and study what Yahweh has said. That's how you come to know. But you can't transition from knowing to understanding unless you make the connections between things. In fact, the Hebrew word for understanding is to connect. It means to connect, to make connections, is how you transition from knowing to understanding. The way you do that is you read other things that God has said about the things that he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we're engaged right now in the process of understanding. So this reads, yes, indeed. Behold, now look up and pay attention. In those days, and at the proper time, when beneficially, as a result of the relationship, I return to change the direction of and restore accordingly the captives whom I'll free, returning the property and possessions of Yahudah, these individuals who relate to Yah and who are related to Yah, and Jerusalem, which is the source from which instruction and guidance on reconciliation flow. I will collect and assemble all of the Gentile nations together, and I will bring them down, lowering them and prostrating them towards the valley of Yosaphat, the place where Yahweh executes judgment. Oh, we got more coming, but just that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
So here is Yahweh says, I'm returning. You know, the second coming of Christ, bull crap.
No.
There wasn't a first Christ, much less a second coming of Christ. It's a diminished manifestation of Yahweh that was here. Yahusha was his sixth appearance.
Mm-hmm.
The last time that he was here, when he fulfilled the first four Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah, just as he was predicted to do in the creation account on the fourth day.
Yeah.
And now, what God is saying, and he says it over and over again, in first person, as Yahweh, he says, when I return.
Now, is there any way you can read that and not see 2033? I mean, that's just so.
Oh, yeah, because he's, again, he's you make connections, and you make all the other connections to what occurs in 2033 in Yom Kippurim. And Yirmiyah 33, he's specifically talking about his return on Yom Kippurim, where he's going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and with Yehudah. So the very thing that he's saying there, when I return accordingly, and I free the captives, and he's also referencing what we read in Yaseyah 17 and 18,
right,
where he's talking about doing this very thing for the children of Yisrael. It's in Malak. It's throughout the prophets that Yahweh tells us that he is going to return. It's even in Hosea. He says, you know, I divorced them. They're no more like my children. But there will be a day
when
I will call them my children, and they will refer to me as their God. And the day in Zechariah when they look upon me whom they have pierced as he returns. So to appreciate the fact that he's talking about his return on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, you have to make some more connections. The connections are all there. They're all obvious. But to transition from knowing this to understanding it does require making those connections.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It's for those of us who have considered those statements, it's obvious that, yes, indeed, behold, look up and pay attention.
Yeah,
in those days and at the proper time being Yom Kippurim, when beneficially, Yom Kippurim, as a result of the relationship, Yom Kippurim means to reconcile the relationship, when beneficially, as a result of the relationship, I return and to change the direction of and restore, you know, Yahweh and Yirmiyah 33 speaks specifically of restoring and renewing and reaffirming his covenant.
Right.
And restore accordingly the captives whom I'll free. Isn't 2033 and Yom Kippurim a Yobel year?
Well, that was what I was going to say, is once you know what a Yobel is and which ones are available, and when you can trace them, because they're every 50 years, then it tells you where the prophecy, the date. It has to be that year, because there's not another one in time, and you connect that dot with when Israel is when they return, there's no more Yobels left.
Yeah, in fact,
it has to be on that thing. So if you think God didn't tell you when it's going to all take place, you're just kidding yourself.
Yeah, you know, and that's why writing is never done when you're trying to convey something that Yahweh said. This is actually the preamble, one verse that was going to go before the chapter was writing on God or government. And it became now a treatise to return to God, you have to first leave religion. And it's, 46 pages, and yet, you know, I didn't even pick up on the Yobel reference here.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got to add that, but you're right. When he's saying free captives and return the possession, which is the land, what is the principal theme of the Yobel?
Yeah, well, everyone is set free, and you return,
right.
All debts are forgiven. I mean,
and the land is returned to Yahweh so we can all enjoy it.
Yeah.
So you're right. We've got to go right back here, and we need to. This is a reference to the Yobel, the Yobel years that are the most important are the Yobel of year 2000 Yah, when Abraham and Isaac with Yahweh and Yosha affirm the covenant on Mount Moriah.
Right.
And exactly 2000 Yobel later, 2000 years later, 40 Yobel. On exactly that same place, Mount Moriah.
Same spot.
Yep. Exactly 40 Yobel later, Yosha fulfills the first Moed Mikre. This is year 4000 Yah. And so 40 Yobel, 2000 years from that date, which was the year 33 on the Roman pagan calendars, becomes year 6000 Yah. That's 2033. And so he's talking about October 2nd. It's sundown. That is Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations.
And you see how much money you just saved all these people who want to go out and buy a prophecy book?
Yeah, this currently, by the way, what we're sharing from is part of a new book. I've completed one chapter. I had completed it prior to Kirk's edition here. I'm well underway to also completing two other chapters. When three chapters are done, it'll be presented under the name of Observations. But
a great book.
It's currently available at the Power on High website, Frank's website, at the Bless Yahweh website, which plays and presents these archives, which is Richard's website, blessyahweh.com, and also on the Facebook page of Larry.
Unpopular Truth.
Unpopular Truth. So those are the places where it is currently, and it will, in addition, eventually be like yadayah.com presents the entire volumes of Yada Yah, and Introduction to God .com is presents the book called An Introduction to God. QuestioningPaul.com presents the review of Paul's first letter, Galatians, and proves that Paul was a false prophet. Observations will have a place of its own that'll be connected with the other books.
Sure.
Anyway, the what this does say is that he's going to return the possessions and free the captives in Yehuda and Jerusalem. And by the way, what Yahweh says when he is in Yeshaya in 17 and 18 is he says, you know, after the Damascus falls, and Damascus is going to fall sometime in the next decade prior to the beginning of the tribulation, and that Israel is thinned at the waist, and that Muslims by the millions flood into to Israel, that that they're going to rape and pillage their way into Jerusalem, and so there will be captives to free. Muslims enslave. That's what they do. There will be captives to free, and they confiscate which belongs to others. And so Yahweh has predicted what the Muslims are going to do, and now he's telling you what he's going to do, how he is going to respond. And this actually is beyond even the Magog War. This is now the Yahweh speaking of the assault of Jerusalem during Armageddon. And so that's what he's specifically addressing here. He says, I will collect and assemble all of the foreign nations. Now, he didn't say I'm going to collect some of the foreign nations because, well, America is exceptional.
They're fine people.
How many times do we hear that that America is the greatest nation on earth and we're an American exceptionalism?
Exceptionalism.
Yes. Yeah. Well, God says I'm going to assemble not one, not a handful, not some of, not even the majority of.
Coal,
he says coal.
All means, right?
Yeah. Coal means all, coal, and all, and all is all means. He's going to assemble every Gentile nation. Not some of them, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to, and by the way, he ain't assembling them for a party. He isn't assembling them for a festival. He is not going to say, hey, you did a great job. If you're judged by Yahweh, you're in serious trouble.
Yeah.
If Yahweh, you know, you're one of the nicest people I've ever known, Kirk. If Yahweh were to judge you,
I'm doomed.
You're doomed, right? Look, Dode is the smartest dude I've ever come to know. If Yahweh were to judge Dode, he'd be finished. And so you don't want to be judged. That's the whole idea of being part of Yahweh's family and availing yourself of the remedies that Yahweh has provided, the benefits that Yahweh has provided for his covenant children, is that we're not judged. You know, we're shown standing up in God's presence. These people who are being judged are showed bowing down in God's presence. You do not want to bow down in his presence. You don't want to be judged by him because it's 100% of the time the outcome is either bad or worse.
Or worse, yeah.
Bad is that your soul is extinguished.
You're over. But the other is much worse.
Much worse. That's a eternal separation. That's your soul goes into a black hole and is kept there forever.
And you're conscious.
Yeah. That's the worst. Yeah, it's the worst. And so he's going to judge the Gentile nations. So the very best that can be said of them is that some of the victims of their militaristic nature and their hostility to God, some of the victims will simply cease to exist. But the leaders, that's not what's going to happen to the leaders. They're all going to be sent to what Christians would call hell. which is where political and religious leaders go and where they will spend eternity. So he's going to assemble all of the Gentile nations together. He's going to look at them all the same. And I'm going to bring them down, lowering them, prostrating them towards the valley of Jehoshaphat. You know, it's not Jehoshaphat.
No.
And the name was chosen for a place, as for a specific reason. It's where Yahweh, Jehoshaphat means Yahweh executes judgment.
Judgment, right.
Bad thing, man. I mean, he's going to be fair. But the outcome...
Yeah, you're falling on their own sword.
Yeah, the outcome's not good here.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, being good is immaterial.
Yeah.
Well, I was a good person. It doesn't matter.
Your point that Larry said is the only thing to be is right.
You're right. And so we're going to continue this in a moment.